Hey, welcome to BioFounders. I'm Sophia Sanchez, and if you want to listen to, watch, or read about the most amazing synthetic biology stories, not only in pharma, but also in food and agriculture, materials, longevity, you name it, then you gotta visit TULEBIO. That is tulebio.com. A monthly newsletter where I keep myself updated on the latest advancements in the field in a non-technical way. It is meant for investors who are interested in the space, but, you know, who has time to keep themselves updated with all of what's happening? For students who are curious, who want to go the extra mile from what they're taught in college or high school. For curious people who are like, hey, synthetic biology sounds cool. I want to learn how this could change my industry or apply to my life. Then this is what TULEBIO is for. Our mission is to bring biotech into the hands of billions. Without further ado, today's interview is with Darko, the CEO and co-founder of MeliBio, a company reinventing, and by the way, already selling honey made using plants instead of the bees, because we want to save the bees. And so in this episode, I asked him about his early entrepreneurial journey, his previous experience in the honey industry, how he met his co-founder, how early prototyping looked like for them, how he thinks about hiring, how he and his team are thinking about their future business decisions as a synthetic biology company, and way more. So let's dive into it. Okay, awesome. Well, welcome to the podcast. Excited to chat with you about MeliBio and your story overall as an entrepreneur and founder of this plant-based and alternative new kind of honey. But first, I'd like to actually ask you, where were you born and raised in the world?
Thank you for having me, Sophia. Great to be on your podcast. I'm a big fan of yours.
Thanks.
My name is Darko Mandic. I was born in Croatia, but I grew up and spent most of my life in Serbia. And about 4 years ago, I immigrated in the United States.
Okay, interesting. And how's it like growing up there? I mean, I've never been. So did you like it there? And what are some things you missed? Some things that you found interesting from there that could have led to the person that you are today?
Yeah, both Croatia and Serbia are amazingly beautiful countries. Croatia is, you know, has one of the best coastlines in the world. Serbia has amazing mountains and plains, pretty much diverse. Unfortunately, both countries share challenging and turbulent times in the 90s. When I was born and raised, there was a civil war there that my family and myself had to go through. So, I became refugee of war twice in my life. First time when I was four, the second time when I was 7 or 8 years old. So, you know, growing up in such a challenging time, I can say that that definitely builds character, but also leaves a mark on a person. And the first time that I was able to reflect on that was actually when I immigrated to California, which is, you know, really a different, different history, different culture, and definitely more relaxed and less challenging than my childhood in former Yugoslavia. So that's kind of a little bit about that. What I really miss is some of my old friends, some of the folks that I've been, you know, studying with or spending some time after the university. I miss talking my language, which is Serbian, to other people than my wife, who is here with me in San Francisco. And definitely I love to visit there, and I love to meet with entrepreneurs there as well and share some of the lessons that I picked up from San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah, no, I mean, hopefully it'll come a time in which, you are able to sort of maybe bring that back or, yeah, as they say, pay it forward, but also, it's interesting to see. I don't know how to think about this, but I was reading about this venture capital firm. What is it called? Well, Hummingbird Ventures, which I think basically has like this thesis of investing in people who've gone through, I guess, life events that made them more resilient and so on. And, many times even people at Y Combinator talk about like this very important factor of determination and resilience, which might have been built in other ways, which are sometimes fortunate or unfortunate, however you would like to see it. But anyways, fast forward a couple of years, were you ever, tell me about your education or your interests as a young person. Did you ever envision yourself being in this space or, whether it's sustainability or otherwise?
I always had broad interests in a couple of things, including biology that I had in my elementary school. Eastern European countries have these educational systems where they throw as many different subjects as possible to young children in elementary school. And at that time, that was really stressful for me to be able to have to learn physics and mathematics and biology, as well as law. I had the basics of law in the last grade of my elementary school and through the entire of my high school. So I always liked a couple of things. After finishing elementary school, I went to high school that was specialized in business, which was a great thing that we have there in Serbia. So I went to through 4 years of some sort of a pre-bachelor of economics education while still in high school. Had commercial law, had learning the basics of purchasing, of trade, international trade, business development. And when I finished my high school, I went to a business school back in Belgrade. It's called the Faculty of Economics, Finance, and Administration. And that business school is essentially an opportunity for students in Serbia and the Southeast Europe region to go to a business school that essentially teaches the Harvard Business School program. They are, that faculty is affiliated with Harvard Business School, bunch of same books. Some of the professors from Harvard were giving us lectures, with video call, video link. So that was really interesting. And, I grew up next to my dad having a business. So entrepreneurship is something that runs in the family. My mom helps my dad with the business. My grandma is also an entrepreneur. So just being influenced by them, seeing, businesses being built, especially without venture capital, which is, a skill that gets to be important again when the capital is scarce. So I would say definitely influenced by entrepreneurship and early on since high school, really directing my focus towards business. But from elementary school, I really remember biology. Actually, I won one of the competitions in biology. Didn't pursue it further. Didn't ever think that, one day things can get me back to loving biology and reading more about it. And that's what happened to me when I co-founded MeliBio.
How did you change this notion of a business, from whatever other types of businesses versus research and development business? What were other experiences that you had prior to MeliBio that you remember as interesting?
Yeah, what's interesting about me and people who know me and people who have been following MeliBio, they probably know it so far. But before launching MeliBio, I used to be a CEO and I used to work for honey companies that use bees to manufacture honey. So essentially, this is my 11th year dealing with honey as a product, which is really fascinating because I love that product so much. I also get to love bees a lot. And so that was kind of a thing that I brought into MeliBio. The other things that I kind of brought with the way how I operate and how I do business is that I've read about venture capital. I've known its capabilities to be a launchpad for ideas to really take off, and I've really taken that opportunity, launching a company that's VC-backed. But seeing people building businesses with real fundamentals from the get-go and being brought up in a part of the world where everything was scarce, food, water, peace, just that respect towards the capital that we raised, I believe helped us to become better stewards of it, to make our capital last longer, to be as efficient as possible, to question almost every spending decision. So I would say that a lot of who we are, and that if we decide to allow ourselves to bring that into the companies that we founded, essentially becomes one of the bricks in the wall of culture that the entire team builds together.
That's probably, you know what, many investors must be seeing in you. Not only, you know, the whole abilities that you have been collecting over, I don't know, more than a decade, likely, you know, of business and so on, but also your insights into the, let's say, the honey industry or the product itself. And so I'd like to get to know a little bit more about those. So what are some things that you noticed that you're bringing, you know, from your prior experience in honey? And was this sort of the way in which MeliBio started, thinking like, oh, this could be, you know, produced in a different way, or how was it basically?
I always love technology as a tool to help humanity advance across the board. I always loved food because my grandma and my mom and dad all together started a small restaurant back in Dalmatian coastline when we were still in Croatia. So, coming from an industry that's food, being passionate about technology, I think, in my opinion, that created a spark that is an important part of MeliBio ethos, because we all at MeliBio really love delicious food. We love our food to be amazing, tasty, accessible, great quality. And we also believe that the evolution is a process that never goes backwards, and that essentially thinking of future everything, including future honey, it's going to be different. So I'd say that mindset, with together with those industry insights, made me a good fit to be a co-founder of the company. I'd say that it's interesting, it's interesting how these companies really start with a story and thinking, because my thinking was, we have plants. These are essentially plant processors, and why can't we just figure out a different way to process plants and then create basically identical product? I wanted to say that there are some things that I've done in my previous part of the honey career when I've been dealing with bees and working for other companies that gave me a little bit of knowledge, especially on the manufacturing side. So working for two different companies, I was able to build two facilities for honey manufacturing. And also in a separate honey company that I worked, I used a co-manufacturer and essentially leaned on people that have manufacturing infrastructure. So having those three examples on different sides of the spectrum, very early on, I was able to convince my co-founder that our approach moving forward will be not raising too much capital, because we're not going to be building our own facilities. Because I've done that, it's hard, takes a lot of time. You always spend more money than what you planned. In Sofia, the worst thing after building a facility is you have to run it. And in my opinion, food tech startups, their founders, their management team, their boards are just not set for success in running manufacturing facilities. That is
Interesting.
absolutely different story. And because of that insight, we approached with our proprietary CapEx-free approach, where we essentially doing biology research, advancing the science, advancing the industry, but we partner with people that own facilities and have manufacturing capabilities, and essentially using them scale quicker and cheaper.
How did it work for you, well, to meet your co-founder?
It's such an amazing story that whenever I'm asked to tell it again, I really enjoy telling it, because so many things worked out in a good way, so that Aaron and I, my co-founder, start MeliBio together in April 2020. So I came to San Francisco in about November, mid-November 2019, a couple of months before COVID. That was very fortunate. And when I came to San Francisco, I started doing meetups because I wanted to find a scientific co-founder. And I went to a bunch of meetups. And at one of those meetups that was organized by the Good Food Institute, I think it was in the WeWork Embarcadero, there was an amazing lecture by Ryan Bettencourt, a person that I've been following even when I was in Serbia, who ended up being investor in MeliBio. So Ryan Bettencourt was speaking there, and I said, look, I can't miss being there, talking, listening to this person, and see who else shows up. And after Ryan's speech, there was a networking piece. I saw a bunch of people from UC Berkeley. I just approached and said, "Hi, can I join you for a conversation?" They said, "Yes." I said, "I'm Darko. I just came from Serbia. I'm looking to launch a sustainable bee-free honey company and looking for a scientific co-founder." And the first person to respond to that was actually Aaron, my co-founder, who said, "Honey without bees, interesting but hard." And I said, "Yeah, that's why I'm in San Francisco. It's absolutely interesting, definitely hard, but absolutely possible in my opinion." And that was our first encounter. After that, we met many times, tried to work on initial concept, because both Aaron and I, we really want to take time to convince ourselves so we can convince others. So I'd say the rest of December, January, February, March, lots of meetings, basically bootstrapping the whole concept before April 2020, when we got our first check from Big Idea Ventures Accelerator. And that's when we officially incorporated the company.
Wow, that sounds awesome. Yeah, and first person you met, right?
Basically, I just told it Aaron a few weeks ago. I just reminded him and I told him, Hey, Aaron, do you remember that you're the first scientist that I ever spoke and we started a company? And now we're doing this for 4 years now and it's working and it's
Yeah.
evolving and it's empowering both Aaron individually, myself individually, and most importantly, the team as a whole, so that we can really move fast, execute, bring new product into the market, and show that the food tech can be commercialized quickly and without hundreds of millions of dollars.
Did you ever talk to someone else or have any criteria that you wanted to check?
There was something that was very important to me that Aaron demonstrated to me, I think in our second conversation. He shared with me that next to having a PhD from UC Berkeley in microbiology, that he's really passionate about plants. He told me that he used to get permaculture lessons, in permaculture gardening lessons when he was early on. His mom is very passionate about gardening. And he told me that he has an amazing garden in Berkeley that where he gets to see a lot of bees. And he started telling me a story about the bumblebees and native bees that he gets to see there. And when I saw him telling that to me, I realized that there's something really important here. That there's a co-founder of the company, that's not myself, who has his own relationship with the bees. And that for me was important because I thought that any person that gets to start a company with another person out of pure excitement, because of that person's concept, without personal separate connection with that topic, that when the hard times come, that person won't have anything to anchor to. So when I heard Aaron's passion about the bees and his story around why are bees important to him, I said to myself, look, this person has his own connection with the bees, and that makes two of us having connection with the bees, meaning that that just creates a strong founding connection for a company that needs to move a lot of mountains before we become successful. So I would say that criteria was important. Honestly, at that time, I wasn't able to know how he will perform as our CSO, and then he transitioned into the CTO role. He didn't know how will I perform as a CEO. Will I be able to raise money? Will I be able to get the team going to land our first customer? You don't know that until you spend some time with the person. We both felt that this is the way to go. We both had a bunch of time to make a conscious decision. He had a trip to India after finishing his PhD before he finally committed to co-founding Mellybio, and I was happy that he took some time off, processed this, and essentially joined the B coalition and the team that's going to give these the break.
I love that. And thanks for sharing that. I see that as advice for, future founders of any type of company, really, to also see how other people anchor to that same passion and share it. Who was the second person that you looked for?
I think we hired a couple of people at around the same time, but I would share the story of our first full-time employee that we brought on board. His name is Ben Mason. He joined Melly Bio as Associate Director of R&D. He has an extensive scientific and biotechnology experience from companies like Zymergen. And it was really funny. At that time, we were still in Berkeley in the Cell Valley Labs by Wild Earth, a co-work, co-lab space where we essentially rented one bench because we didn't have money for two. And I remember Aaron and I interviewing Ben. We're still going through our pre-seed funds, preparing to raise seed round. And we were interviewing Ben, and Ben asked us, "Do you guys have the seed funds?" And I told him, as we're speaking, we don't, but we're very close to it, and we would really love you to join us." And he did join us, and a couple of months later, we did raise the seed round and started expanding the team. But I remember at that time how, I really took a bold statement to really reassure him on that meeting that our couple of months of burn shouldn't really worry him at that time, and that we're definitely going to close the seed round. Ben is about to turn almost 2 years at Belly Bio now, and he is one of the key team members that we really love that he's here. And I will always be grateful to Ben that at that time he essentially, decided to bet his career on two guys that didn't have their own office but used the co-working space. So yeah, that's an interesting story. Today we have, 11 full-time employees and about 20 people on the team because we have some fractional folks and some part-time folks. And yeah, I'll never remember, Ben's expression when he walked into space and asked us, "Oh, is this all yours?" And like, "No, that just the corner there is ours." But yeah, he believed in us as we believed in him, and it's 2 years now, it's working perfectly.
That's awesome. Love the story. Also, I'm curious to know a little bit more about the prototyping phase. You mentioned at first it was an idea you wanted to bring to reality. You looked for a co-founder and then you started working. So, how did that phase work, being at the lab and so on?
Yeah. So we started as a precision fermentation first company
Okay.
because we realized that in the honey production, within bees' anatomy, there are, opportunities through natural processes in the current bee to help bee process the plants and convert that into, building blocks of honey. So we started with the precision fermentation piece. But the more we were working on that in early stage, we realized how it will take some time to scale precision fermentation. And in those early days, there wasn't as much as scale-up partners as there are today, and absolutely not a lot of biomanufacturing partners. And I started realizing as a non-scientific, a non-technical CEO, I started realizing that we might end up in a position that I would personally feel uncomfortable, which is being for a way too long a scientific kind of a garage project. Because at that time, I started realizing that some of the companies might have been overfunded, that there's some sort of a food tech bubble that I didn't want us to get in from, any kind of negative point of view. And I realized we have to do things differently. So I came up after a long thinking and talking to some people, I convinced Aaron that we should start making samples that are focusing on the other part of the work, which is, turning plants into something that looks like honey at least, just to start showing investors that, we have a product that maybe they shouldn't taste from the get-go, but that they can just see how it performs, how it looks like. And out of that approach in making samples that started to become better and better with every batch of investor samples that we were making, until we were comfortable sharing those samples with some chefs, some Michelin star chefs, high-end chefs, that started actually telling us that this sample is actually starting to taste really good. Something like a standard clover honey that, exists in the food service or retail. And, after about a year, we realized that, oh my God, we have a branch of science powered by plant science that we can commercialize into some types of honeys that maybe don't require precision fermentation or can exist without that. And that's how, out of a, desire to make some samples, a whole new, we call it today generation one, technology at MeliBio exists, which is plant science, and then the generation two, which is actually the first one that we started with, but we call it the generation two because it comes after generation one, is actually the precision fermentation power technology. So this just speaks about how, pivots do happen sometimes by accident, sometimes just your environment and people around you kind of naturally get you into some sort of a pivot and prototyping that after some time maybe turns out different than what you originally planned. So being open to kind of see where the entrepreneurial journey takes you and being open to feedback and listening to what environment sends back as an input is, I think, essential in building all kinds of startups, especially biology-based alternative protein ingredients or that sort of startups.
You kind of touched a little bit on one of my next questions, which is, how are you planning on expanding? Is this going to be sort of a company that sells different kinds of plant-based foods, or is it going to evolve into generation two? And have you ever considered just staying as, plant-based instead of fermentation because of the challenges that generation two would involve?
We've been having deep thoughts around all kinds of approaches and directions that we might take, because that's what responsible founders do. We landed on MeliBio being a technology company that is, changing the technology company that's building a vision of a world where humans and bees thrive, and that technology company uses all kinds of technology stacks to help alleviate pressure on the bees and deliver amazing products that are known to be made now being animal free. In that process, with our Generation One technology, we launched our plant-based honey. We created a brand which is called Melody, and Melody is the food part of MeliBio as an overarching technology company. Within Melody, we're going to be launching all kinds of SKUs that we're working on, all kinds of products that people will be really cool to have. And then above that, there's MeliBio that will be, continuing to innovate and research various technological approaches to help maybe not necessarily only the food industry and the beverage industry, like we're doing today at Melody, but maybe also looking into some other industries where bee-made products are known to be an amazing addition, premium ingredients and ingredients that are functional. If you think of honey and if you think about some specialty honeys, some of those are even used in the pharma industry. So MeliBio wants to, remain that technology company and science company. And Melody is our consumer-facing food brand slash division. Is going to be growing its presence through various channels and meet the consumers where they are.
Amazing. You talked a little bit about, these sort of high-end, let's call it, kinds of honey. So, which sort of market are you going for? Is it, the general consumer, or I suppose, obviously, people who are conscious about the environmental benefits of this and so on. But yeah, tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. We decided to go with Clover Honey first, which is equivalent if Tesla made the Tesla 3 first. In our opinion, Clover was able to be replicated almost entirely through plant science. It's a mainstream type of honey, and we really wanted to go after scale. In our future products, we're looking into all kinds of different types of honeys and bees products. Over 300 types of honeys only, and as I mentioned, they have various applications in various industries. We, as a company, want to essentially do everything that we can so that humans don't need to put bees to labor, because what happens in the honey production and the production of other bee products using the domesticated Apis mellifera or European honeybee and deploying them into ecosystems creates a pollinator gentrification situation where European honeybees, with their own presence, leave no other pollinators to share the space because they're just too aggressive, invasive. So for us, the success would be that world where humans and bees thrive. And in that world, MeliBio, using our technology, is making all the bee-made products. And bees are just thriving, all kinds of bees, and just living their life, making a little bit honey for them as a food, but definitely not kept in boxes and deployed in ecosystems so that our planet is at net loss. We want MeliBio to be a net gain for the planet, using science, using technology, making delicious products that people can distinguish from what bees are able to make today.
I love that you clarified that because that's one of the questions that I sometimes get from people who I talk to about solutions like, lab grown foods or even, alternative honey and so on. They question what the environmental impact, especially negative, could be of no longer using animals and to produce these products. So that definitely answers the question. And you talked about the future of the company in terms of the different products. How do you see this in the next 10 years?
10 years is, I think Bill Gates said that people overestimate what they can do in a year and absolutely underestimate what they can achieve in a decade. And I keep reminding myself of that quote. 10 years is a lot of time. And 10 years from now, MeliBio and maybe some other companies in the space, it's not a zero-sum game, can be delivering tech and science solutions and alleviate significant pressure on bee ecosystems. I imagine 10 years from now, most of the honey that's being used as an ingredient will be made not through the animal. I think organic and artisanal beekeepers will still exist. That $20 jar of honey at farmers market on Sunday probably going to be, 10, 20, 30x, and it's probably not going to be food at that time. It's going to be something special as a present. But most of the manufacturing of honey will be coming through science, and that will be such an amazing thing for bees. It will empower various bee biodiversity. We already have examples and previews of how that can look like. Australia had one of the strictest COVID policies. Beekeepers were not able to visit their farms. And in one region in Australia, a native species of Australian bumblebees that was declared gone forever from that space actually resurfaced again because beekeepers were not allowed to visit the bee farms, deploy more beehives. So with less honeybees, those bumblebees, native bumblebees, were spotted again. And that when I read that story, I got goosebumps because that was basically the preview of the world that we're creating. So yeah, I'm super excited about science. I know that many people need convincing around science going deep into food because food is intimate. Food has tradition that's being passed on from generations to generation. And someone who's coming from a food family that owned a restaurant as a big foodie, for me, food is also tradition. But we also take a look at the world around us. We move differently. We work differently than 20, 50 years ago. We talk differently to each other. We promote, evolved values among each other. It's really kind of unrealistic to expect that the food can and will remain as it used to be before, because there's an important thing happening. There's way more people who need to be fed than nature and animals' ability to produce food nutritiously and to be delicious and high quality for 10 billion people that this planet will host in 2050.
Amazing. Any other piece of advice you'd like to share with any other bio founders?
Entrepreneurship is hard. It's not for everyone. It's going to throw a lot of things on you. Staying alive for many years very often means reaching success. Focus on the small wins. Believe in yourself. Build an amazing team. Lean on other people. Trust your people and drive that innovation together for a mission that you jointly gather around.
Thank you so much, Darko. This was amazing.
Thank you so much, Sophia.
May I remind you to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn as Tuli Bio. Seriously, though, we'll be posting some sick content that you do not want to miss, so please share it, and I'll see you in the next one.